If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good evening, America. This is Sam Thurman, and you're tuned to A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez, my co-host. How you doing this evening?
Doing good. Ready to talk about the injustice in this nation.
All right. Right here, ready to go.
Yeah, we got a lot of good things that's going to be on the program tonight. We have the wives of the IRP6 will be joining us in a little while. That's Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes. Again, they're the wives of the IRP6, and at least four of the wives, and the wives of four of the guys, let me put it that way. And then also, later in the program, we have Jeffrey Deskovich, and he is an exoneree out of New York, and he'll be joining us for a little while to talk about some things that were related to his case. As usual, got to do this disclaimer. Cliff and I are not attorneys, and Ethel is not an attorney. And A Just Cause Coast to Coast is not a program that provides legal advice, so please contact your legal professionals for specific legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed during this program by the guests do not necessarily reflect that of A Just Cause or A Just Cause Coast to Coast. As always, we're excited that you chose to join us this evening and as we dive into compelling and insightful dialogue about judicial injustice. Now, you know, one of the things also, we've had some interesting guests on the program over the last couple of weeks. Last week we had LaWanna Clark and talked about her case that should have been overturned had the writing expertise had been used by Judith Housley. Any of the programs that we've talked about, and folks can go back to our website and take a look at and listen to the shows on the archive, and that will be at a-justcause.com, a-justcause.com. Also, Cliff, want to announce the launching of our new website.
Yes, yes.
And that's at ajcradio.com, ajcradio.com. So, folks, you can go out there and take a look at our new website. We also have information about past programs. We have information about exonerees. If you'd like to call into the program this evening, you can call in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. So let's get into a little bit of one of the articles that you found today, Ethel, about a case that's going on in Alabama and about some criminal misconduct on the part of prosecutors down there. And we're talking federal prosecutors, and we can talk a little bit about how that relates to the IRP6 case because, you know, some of these things that they're talking about in this article definitely relate to the IRP6 case.
Yeah.
So what's that article about?
I was looking through this, and I think this has been a couple of years. However, this gentleman was a defense contractor in Huntsville, Alabama. His name is Alex Latifi. And he was talking about how, you know, they basically railroaded him the same as they did with the IRP6. And eventually the man was acquitted of the charges of prosecutor, and you know, and he is filing charges or filing a motion, I guess, towards the prosecutor for charges of prosecutorial misconduct in his case, you know, because some of the evidence was deliberately presented false, incomplete, and misleading. And this man ended up spending over $300,000 just for his own defense, you know. His business was raided, you know, at the same time that they were raiding his business, you know, they were there raiding his home at the same time. And his wife was just like, you know, what is going on? They had no clue as to what was going on, you know, and what they were trying to say basically was that he was providing some type of information to the Chinese, you know, instead of what he was doing really was trying to find parts, you know, with this business that he had was called Axion. And what they did was they made parts for the government. And he was, you know, basically trying to get parts that were cheaper, working, you know, towards getting information from the Chinese with parts that were cheaper to provide to the government. But I guess his secretary got in there and she started forging checks on him, and all kinds of stuff ended up happening. And she was passing on information that she was only getting bits and pieces of to the FBI, and ended up bringing this man's business down.
And, you know, that talk that closely relates to some of the things that we've talked about as far as how in the IRP6 case that Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch,
mm-hmm.
and how they conducted themselves through the investigation and through the trial, and, you know, wouldn't allow certain expert witnesses to appear.
Right.
There's certain information that was not allowed to be presented. And then, you know, one of the things early on, and we haven't talked a lot about this, but, you know, there were motions that were being filed, and there were some things that were going on back in 2010, even before IRP went to trial,
right,
with regard to obtaining and seizing banking records of the IRP6, folks that were members of their church, and just business records, and mm-hmm. did not have subpoenas. And so when that situation came up in a motion in August of 2010, mm-hmm. basically, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, he basically stated that, you know, to Judge Arguello, that if we allow you to understand how we obtain these records, mm-hmm. then we're on a slippery slope. I mean, Cliff, when you hear something like that, that just reeks of someone that is trying to cover something up.
Absolutely, and you look at what Kirsch said then, and how, you know, Judge Arguello, it's like she put up a front, like, okay, well, we're going to look into this. I'm going to take this under consideration. But then she just let him walk over it. She bypassed it. Suddenly the issue just disappeared. And looking at this case with Mr. Latifi, you know, mm-hmm. this is totally insane, because you look at what one of the assistant U.S. attorneys here, David Estes, he's quoted as saying, "We don't care if Latifi is innocent,
mm-hmm.
and
our goal is to put him out of business." Now, do you say we don't care if he's innocent? We want to put him out of business, and we're locking him up.
Exactly.
And when you look at all the laws that they broke, they basically coerced someone to perjure themselves.
Yeah.
And now the person that did the perjury, now they're trying to get the assistant U.S. attorney, just like with Darlene Martinez, the court reporter. Now they're having the U.S. attorney's office is protecting this person who perjured themselves. And you look at the whole thing, you're like, all these laws were broken.
Yeah.
All these things were done. You have the prosecutor, you have witnesses, you have the judge who let it go, and nothing's happening to any of these people.
And, exactly. You know, when you talk about that he didn't care if he was innocent,
yeah,
that makes me think about, and we have sworn affidavits mm-hmm. to the fact that Attorney Goodread, who was one of the court-appointed attorneys at the time for Kendrick Barnes, one
right.
of the IRP6,
mm-hmm.
and Goodread made a statement
right.
to Kendrick that was made to him, mm-hmm. basically, you know, based on other conversations that he was a part of, and Goodread tells Kendrick, in relation to the LaWanna Clark
right,
case,
right.
that, you know, it doesn't matter if LaWanna has evidence of her innocence. She's going to do jail time.
See that?
That sounds like, you know, a serious, serious problem right there.
And right. And the reason that they don't care that, you know, I don't care if you're innocent, like this U.S. attorney is saying, I don't care if you have evidence. I mean, they withheld evidence and everything in this, but you look at LaWanna Clark's case, you look at the IRP6 case, you look at all these federal issues of people being incarcerated wrongly
mm-hmm.
and then let out, you know, up to 38 years later, and you look at the bottom line is because nobody holds these prosecutors' feet to the fire.
That's
nobody
right.
says that you break the law, you go in, you tell people, perjure yourself, lie on the stand
mm-hmm.
so that we can get this you know, so that we can basically get this conviction. Nobody does anything to them. All the way from the judge, all the way down. I mean, they had the special agents from the FBI, from the, not in this case, from the Army
the
Criminal
Army.
Investigations
uh-huh.
Command.
Uh-huh.
So you have military people breaking, you know, basically the regular public law. They're obviously breaking military law.
Yeah.
You have the assistant U.S. attorneys who are basically lying about the situation. They have witnesses who are purging themselves under their behest, and nothing's happening to any of them. And then to read that now the U.S. Attorney's Office is coming to basically defend them to say, no, we're going to bring them under our umbrella of jurisdiction. We're going to bring them under our umbrella of protection and use the taxpayer dollars, the whole U.S. government's, you know, everything at their beck and call to protect these people who obviously broke the law and put this man in prison.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that I noted at the bottom of the article that you found, Ethel, is a quote and a directive from 1940, the then Attorney General Robert Jackson. And it says, you know, that almost every federal prosecutor knows the famous guidance provided in 1940 by Attorney General Robert Jackson, the future Supreme Court Justice and Chief U.S. Nuremberg War Crimes Prosecutor. Jackson urged all U.S. attorneys to remember that the government I got to slow this one down. The government never loses a case when justice prevails. Regardless of which side, quote, wins in the short term, isn't it time? And then it goes on to say, isn't it time to start acting on that? So basically, Attorney General Jackson back in 1940 was saying that as long as justice prevails, it's not about getting a win in the win column.
Right.
And you know, that's one of the things that we've talked about.
Exactly.
It seems like it's so prevalent these days, and it was so obvious in the IRP 6 case that it's all about getting a win in the win column. And so, you know, we want to be sure that, you know, we stay focused on quotes like this.
Yeah.
You know, when they say, you know, justice prevails regardless of which side wins because of the fact that it's about doing what's right.
That's
we're going to come back to that. Cliff, go ahead and hit that real quick.
All righty. America is still the freest country on earth. And those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away. And our constitutional expert, Matthew Opoliski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opoliski, Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins.
This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman with my co-host, Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez. In the studio tonight, we will be bringing on shortly Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes. They are wives of four of the IRP 6. Callers, if you'd like to call into the show and if you have comments, questions, or like to share your thoughts, the number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Cliff, what's going on with the IRP 6 this week?
Well, we have the motions that were put in for to basically get the evidence as far as the 200 pages of the transcript that's missing. As some of you may know, and some of you may not, we have sued the court reporter Darlene Martinez and the U.S. government, namely John Walsh's U.S. Attorney's Office up in Denver, has come to her rescue. Just Cause paid her for the entire transcription of the court transcript, and she has not provided that. When we sued her, the U.S. government came to her rescue and said she was doing her job as a official court agent, which is a lie. She was doing her job as a independent contractor to provide to us what we paid for. She is in breach of contract. We have sued her for that. We have Cornell Johnson up in Denver working on that with us. Also joining him is Mark Garagos in L.A. of Garagos and Garagos. And we're just it's really appalling to see how the U.S. government does work. But it's great to see an attorney, you know, such as Mark Garagos and his team and the team that's working on this that really holds their feet to the fire and says, look, you're going to do what's right. The public interest is what's at heart here. And that's what we have to maintain.
And, you know, when we talk about the 200 pages missing on the transcript, you know, the last day of trial of the IRP 6 case, they talked about, or the transcript actually shows where Judge Arguello stated that and she asked Martinez how many pages were left out of the transcript. And she stated 200 pages. So, you know, that's ridiculous when you talk about 200, and it's right there in the transcript,
in the transcript.
When they're talking about that. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. In the studio, we have Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes, the wives of four of the IRP six. They will be joining us here shortly. We'll be right back after these messages.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Time starts now. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat? Where can you find the answers to these questions?
Car crashes are one of the leading killers of U.S. children. Many of those deaths could be prevented by making sure that kids are in the right seat for their age and size. Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. That's safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Sam Thurman, your host. My co-hosts are Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. A Just Cause Radio, where we bring you education and awareness and information about judicial injustice right here on conservativenationmedia.com. So, Cliff, we were, before the break, we started talking about the activities that's going on with the IRP 6 and their appeal, and obviously trying to get those 200 pages of transcript that are missing. And, you know, that all stems from a sidebar that occurred during trial where Judge Arguello tried to, she basically compelled the IRP 6 to take the stand. She violated their Fifth Amendment right where they were the prosecutor cut short his case. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, the IRP 6, they were had to scramble to get their witnesses there when the witnesses were not available. I mean, you can't bring folks in from Washington, D.C., New York, and so forth at the drop of a hat.
Right.
And so Judge Arguello, she basically tells them that either you get someone on the stand or you're going to have to take the stand. Now, when they go back to the judge and say, we want that part of that sidebar, we want that transcript, all of a sudden it comes up missing. How is that?
Right, and not only either you get somebody there or you take the stand, but you either take the stand or I will close your case for you.
Exactly.
Now, how do you tell someone? Now, there's a difference.
What about due process?
Right. You have due process. But you have the difference between when a prosecutor is putting on his case trying to convict somebody, then you have a defendant who is presumed innocent. And it fills my mouth with guile every time I use that phrase, presumed innocent, because it is not true. Nobody in this great nation of ours is presumed innocent until they're proven guilty. If you get indicted by the federal government, you are basically presumed guilty, and you have to prove your innocence, just like Lamont Banks when he was here. And he said every juror that was there in the juror pool said, when his lawyer asked, how many of you think this man is guilty of something? And they all raised their hand just because he's sitting there.
And his jury was still pulled.
Right.
From
I mean, there's no evidence. There's not, all they know is this is this type of case. Who thinks he's guilty? And nothing has even happened. But when you look at that, and then you say, okay, the defendant has to, you know, prove themselves innocent. And then you tell them, well, I'm going to close your case for you. Now Judge Arguello, she didn't help when Colin Reese of Colorado Bureau of Investigations, when he was subpoenaed, and he was basically hiding out at work and saying, you know, I'm not coming, you know, I'll make a decision whether I show up. Now, instead of her doing what she did, which was wrong, saying, well, telling the defense, it's your responsibility to get your witness here. No, Judge Arguello,
it's
your responsibility,
right,
to say you have been subpoenaed by the federal court. If you don't show up, you are in contempt of court.
That's right.
I will send three federal marshals to wherever you are at, and I will collect you, bring you to the courthouse, and deliver you to the witness stand. That is what was supposed to be told to him, not to admonish the defendants and tell them it's your responsibility to get your witnesses here. Then what do we do? What is the subpoena for?
Well, and you know, I kind of recall a little bit of that conversation too. You know, just because there was good support for the IRP6 in the courtroom,
right,
I think Judge Arguello even made some off-the-cuff comment like, have some of your people in
right,
there.
Right,
it's
have
like,
some of your people.
What does that mean,
exactly,
Judge?
Yeah.
You know, Judge Arguello, if you'd like to call into the program, the number is 718-305-7176.
Please
718-305-7176. We'd like to know what you meant by that comment, have some of your people call and get some of these witnesses
right
here.
Because
we
it's not the responsibility of anyone but the court, Judge Christine Arguello, to ensure once the subpoena has been delivered properly and it has been served, it is her responsibility to ensure that if a subpoenaed witness is not showing up, she's supposed to be on the phone. Hey, this is Judge Christine Arguello of the 10th District Court. You're supposed to be in my courtroom right now. Where are you at?
That's right.
And if you don't
right.
show up, guess what? The marshals are on the way to get you.
Well,
and
they already know she wasn't going to do that. Why would she insert her responsibility at that point when she hasn't asserted it at all?
Well, exactly. Well, she asserted her authority,
mm-hmm,
but she also let the assistant U.S. attorney, Matthew Kirsch, the prosecutor, let him get away with saying he was in touch with, you know, some of the defense witnesses. Oh, Your Honor, I talked to this person. They're not going to be able to make it. They're on a hunting trip. Why are they telling you that they're on a hunting trip? Why are they telling you that I'm not going to be able to be in court today? That's called jury tampering when it comes to me and you. If we talk to the prosecutor's witness, you're going to jail for jury tampering.
Absolutely.
You just threatened a witness. You were in contact with him, and you weren't supposed to. When Matthew Kirsch does it, the judge just passed off like, oh, okay, well, you were in contact with mm-hmm. him, and that's the reason he gave you. Now a witness is gone. But then when Andrew Alvarelli, mm-hmm. the expert witness, tries to get on the stand,
mm-hmm.
they put him off. Like, oh, no, he's not gonna testify. But mm-hmm. if you don't get somebody on the stand, then you're either going to be put on the stand to testify yourself as a defendant, or I'm going to close your case. It's totally ridiculous. And you look at all the, you know, you can't call them errors. I'm not going to call them egregious acts. I'm just going to call them the criminal activity
that
the judge did during this
it's
crime.
It's misconduct.
Exactly.
It's
she
misconduct.
Knows exactly what she was supposed to
That's
be doing.
Right.
She took
Absolutely.
Advantage of the defendants because they went pro se.
And
yeah.
you know, Cliff and Ethel, you know, I think a lot of people out there listening sometimes wonder, well, why are Just Cause and why does this team – push this and hit this so hard and talk about it with such vigor the way we do,
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that someone out there is listening
That's
who
right.
can take action. You know, every show we say, you know, if there's someone in Congress, some legislator, someone that's in the DOJ.
Exactly.
I mean, Ethel, you reach out to the DOJ on a daily basis.
Daily basis.
And there is someone out there who can take some action.
There
I mean,
has to be,
you know, we it's funny how initially, you know, we'd send letters in and we were getting replies back saying, hey, it's not my responsibility. And those letters were not signed by anyone.
Exactly.
Now we're getting letters back. You know, they're still saying, well, hey, you know, we're not doing
right.
anything or we can't do anything, blah, 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 blah. But people are starting to sign them because we started saying, you know, what's up with this?
Exactly.
We're getting letters.
Yeah.
Who's responsible for this?
And, you know, one of the things, too, that I was looking at, even in that article about Mr. Latifi and mm-hmm. how he reached out to the Office of Professional Responsibility. Okay.
Well, that's who's doing the investigation now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So my thing is, when we reached out to the Office of Professional Responsibility, what did they say?
Yeah, that doesn't fall under the purview of our responsibility.
Absolutely.
Excuse me, this does.
Somebody's a liar.
And that's why I say that's why we hit it so with such vigor, because of the fact that we know it is their responsibility.
And, you know, and the thing, too, is when they send you them kind of picking form letters and they don't have nobody's name on them, that's because they don't want you to know who they are. They don't want you to be able to call there and say, let me talk to so-and-so. This is the person that signed this letter.
That's right.
They're
That's
not
right.
going to do that.
Exactly. And just like now they're signing the letters, they're saying we have to put a name to it because a Just Cause is basically holding our feet to the fire,
That's
telling
right.
the public
That's right.
that if you reach out to DLJ, don't let them get away with sending you a form letter that basically came from Eric Holder's puppy.
Exactly.
You know, it's like
exactly.
it's like
Thank
who signed this? The public is not paying you, electing you in, putting you in a position for you to rubber stamp us.
Exactly.
That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for somebody to take responsibility, somebody that when we reach out and say, hey, I'm paying your salary. You are there because I voted your boss into office. He appointed you. Now do something. Do your job.
Exactly.
Don't give
exactly.
me a form. I can write my own form letter and print it out and give it to myself if that's what I'm
that's
looking for.
Exactly.
And, you know, back in August when Attorney General Eric Holder made his speech before the American Bar Association mm-hmm. stating that, you know, far too many people are incarcerated for no law enforcement reason.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those are the kind of things. It's like their words, we're giving them their own words back.
Thank you.
And there's enough evidence in this case, and it's proving out to be true,
yeah.
that the IRP6 are not supposed to be in prison.
And you know what?
Go
we're going to hold their feet to the fire, Eric Holder, your feet to the fire, until they either start smoking or you start talking.
Well, all righty then.
Callers, if you'd like to call into the program, it's 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. You can also follow us as far as on Facebook, and you can, or I guess it's proper to say like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. I got to get that social networking talk down. But if you'd like to look at some of the documentation that's related to the IRP6 case, you can go to Free the IRP6. That's Free the IRP6, the number 6. .org. Also, we have a-justcause.com, and like we talked about at the top of the show, we have a new website for AJC Radio. That's ajcradio.com, ajcradio.com. You can listen to archives of the program, and also you can look at some of the exoneree moments and listen to some of the information on that. So coming up later in the program, we also have the four of the wives of the IRP6. That's Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes. And we're going to talk about how this thing affects families. And, you know, on our program on Thursday, we're going to have the children of the IRP6. And there's a lot of statistics out there that mm-hmm. talks about this. And so, you know, we're going to be talking about that here in a moment. So as far as Ethel, what's the phone number for, you know, we got a calling campaign going.
Oh, yeah.
And so into Eric Holder's office. What's that? And share a little bit about that before we go into the next
question. Absolutely. And we have a campaign of about 30-plus people, okay, that we reach out, call in Eric Holder's office, fax in his office. We're emailing every possible route of communication that we can get to his office. And I want to ask the listeners out there, contact Eric Holder's office. Call him, 202-514-2003 or 514-2005. Give him a call and tell him, investigate what's going on here and why this transcript is missing. We need you people to step up and do something. Everybody, because you could be the next one, you know, on the list. You don't know when they're going to come knocking on your door. Do something. We have families. The IRP6 have families. We want these guys to be home with their families where they belong.
That's
these
right.
are innocent, upstanding Christian family men, and they should be home with their families. And we're asking you, reach out, call Eric Holder's office, ask him to investigate what has taken place in this case.
And, you know, Ethel, when we put that plea out there, you know, we also have a couple of petitions that we've been pushing. And you can to justcause.com and go to change.org. And there's one petition that we have out there to hold prosecutors accountable. We found out last week that the Virginia Law School also has a petition, and that one is on www.causes.com. And so people, listeners, please go out and check out those petitions.
Absolutely.
Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leave the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline of those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That'll take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join a conservative revolution where America always wins.
Hi, I'm Kathy Henners, your host on Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. Please join me each Friday as we talk about subjects like the Muslim Brotherhood, their goals, their agenda, and how it affects our schools, our law enforcement, and our communities. As a retired police officer, I'll give you an inside look into this issue and so much more. Don't miss it. Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then... the dreaded splash fight. It's Dad O'Clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman. In the studio with me are my co-hosts, Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. Also joining us this evening, we're talking about the IRP 6 case, and we have the wives of four of the IRP 6. We have Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes. Good evening, ladies. How you doing?
Good evening. We're fine.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. And Yolanda, let's start with you. You know, Gary Walker, and a lot of times on the program we talk about Gary as being a genius, and he's the developer of the Case Investigative Lifecycle software. And see, that's love right there, guys. When she, you know, she smiles like that when you mention his name. See,
go ahead, Sam.
So, you know, Yolanda, we talk about Gary a lot of times as far as the development of the Case Investigative Lifecycle software and the fact that, you know, what he put into that and what went into that. So, you know, tell us a little bit about Gary and his dedication to developing that software.
Well, Gary is a very committed person. Once he starts getting ready to do something, he saw this need a long time ago and wanted to do something to help out his country after the 9/11 attacks had occurred, that went really deep with him. And so from that point on, he started really pulling things together. He started getting the help of his friends and discussing what they could do to help to stop this kind of tragedy from ever happening again. Gary is a very honest, upstanding person, a good moral person, a good man, a good father. He doesn't really, I mean, he's just a all-around good guy. He's very well liked by all of his colleagues when he was in working, his friends. He's just a good guy.
And Esther, your husband, David Banks, he was the COO of IRP Solutions. And I know, you know, oftentimes I refer to David as tenacious businessman. And I know I've heard your daughter talk about her dad a lot of times, you know, that he was always on the phone. He's always pushing for business. When you think about the dedication that David put into the company and the things that have happened as a result of this case, you know, what when you saw David doing business, what did you see in him?
I saw him working hard. I saw him always on the phone trying to make deals. He was always doing demonstration or talking to people about traveling, if it was to New York or Philadelphia to do a demo or demonstration. He was always excited and happy. And he pushed really hard. That's what I saw. I saw a hardworking person, a person that believed in what they were doing and, you know, wanted to get the sale done. And a lot of times, you know, with the demos, there was different parts to it, like a pilot part or, you know, the different parts they had. And so he was always excited. He pushed a lot to try to get a sale. That's what I saw.
And, you know, that's important to bring out because of the fact that when you look at the case and how Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, you know, tried to paint this picture of the guys as being, you know, crooked, running a scheme and some sort of scam, and that there was no product, there was no company, and there, you know, this, that, and the other. You know, when you hear that kind of stuff and you know, right, and just listening to even this account, I mean, it's one thing for us to talk about it, but then when you have the family talking about it, and oftentimes Cliff and I have talked about this story from the standpoint that we can talk about certain aspects of it from a firsthand account because of the fact that we actually worked at IRP as well.
Right.
And so, but it's different when we have other folks and their wives coming in to talk about it. Tasha, your husband, Demetrius Harper, President, CEO of DKH Enterprises, and he was a partner, his company was a partner to IRP Solutions. And I know that, you know, just knowing Demetrius and knowing the type of person he was driven. And so when you think about your husband and think about, you know, what he put into this and the accusations that have come as a result of that, you know, what kind of thoughts come to mind on that?
The thoughts that come to my mind are it's unfathomable. I mean, the type of person Demetrius is, he's a very hard worker. If he believes in something, he's going to go after it full force. It's just uncomprehendable, all these charges that came down and, you know, how it affected him mentally. You know, he just couldn't believe that all these things were coming out. What they were saying was not true, because when Demetrius goes for something, he pushes hard. And it did take a toll on him. You know, it kind of shakes your confidence when someone is, you know, spouting all these lies and you know they're not true and you do everything within you knows it's not true. It makes you extremely angry. And he did get very angry and over all the lies that were going on, and that made him even fight harder to get the truth out.
Right. And Tisha Barnes, your husband, Kendrick Barnes. Now, at the time that this case kicked off, you guys were not married at that time, and you got married since then. But, you know, it has impacted your life. I mean, with the trial and the pretrial going on, when did you guys get married?
We got married in December 2006.
And so that was right after the raid, but all the things that's led up to it, the indictment, the case itself. And I know that you were in the courtroom quite a bit, but as far as, you know, how Kendrick was dealing with it, and by the way, listeners, Kendrick Barnes, he was the CIO, the Chief Information Officer for IRP Solutions. You know, how did that impact Kendrick's, you know, thought processes, you know, his faith? You know, I'm sure you guys have talked about as far as faith in the judicial system, which we all, our eyes have been open to that. Mm-hmm. So share a little bit about Kendrick's thoughts on that.
Kendrick's a pretty quiet guy, so I don't think back then he expressed as much disappointment and a lot of the feelings that he was going through. And I think in the back of all of our minds, we thought that the justice system would play out right and that innocent people wouldn't be put in prison and that you would be able to present all your evidence and the jury would be able to hear that. And when we got to the courtroom, nothing like that happened. You know, there was evidence that didn't get presented. Our expert witnesses, that's an issue that's on appeal right now. They were taken. I was there when they took him off the stand. It was like they just introduced him. He said his name, and that was it. You know, they took him off the stand. There was just so many things that went wrong and that were crooked. You know, now looking back, we talk about a lot of, you know, you can't believe how blind you were to it.
It's
all.
It's a big learning curve.
It's a huge learning curve, and you don't expect that this would happen in the U.S.
Yeah. And Yolanda, I know that with you were in the courtroom every day.
Yes.
And I know you were a vital part as far as from a support perspective. And, you know, I was in the courtroom a few days. I think Cliff was in the courtroom. Ethel was in the courtroom. To be sitting there every day, I know that is tasking. And even now, I mean, you know, the men have been incarcerated in federal prison in Florence, Colorado now for over 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
And even before that, they were incarcerated in the Denver Detention Center until they were allowed to be out for a short period of time. But they were incarcerated for 42 days even then, and they were then released on bond pending sentencing. And so, you know, those kind of things I'm not the spouse, you know, obviously, but, you know, when sitting there as a friend, you know, I know what it did to me. Now, you know, we got to take a quick little break here, but hold that thought, and Cliff just has to read this real quick, and then we'll continue this conversation.
ConservativeNationMedia.com starts off the work week every Monday in a big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. But even if you're not from the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading out all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check him out. Brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
So, Yolanda, this is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you educational awareness and information about judicial injustice. In the studio this evening, we have Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes, the wives of four of the IRP six, the wives of Gary Walker, David Banks, Demetrius Harper, and Kendrick Barnes. And we're just talking about a little bit of how this whole thing impacts the family life. So, Yolanda, you know, I know in preparation for the trial, you were actively involved. There were a lot of sessions at your home.
Yes.
And so, you know, how did you prepare yourself for that? I mean, you know, Tisha just said, you are thinking that the justice system is going to play out the way it's designed to.
Yes.
But then when you see all this crooked stuff going on, what do you think?
It really opens your eyes to a lot of stuff. You know, you would sit sometimes and watch TV and hear about other people going to trial and about having charges against them and stuff, and you sit there and you watch it, but you figure, well, the justice system works. That's what you always hear all your life.
Right.
It always works.
Right.
I had a very rude awakening when all this occurred. I remember sitting in the courtroom watching my husband and his friends fighting for their lives.
Exactly.
Trying to defend themselves against things that were not true. And even to this day, just to think about the feelings have not left. It's still a very raw feeling about how all this transpired. I remember we were in my house in the basement. My basement looked like a legal office. There were papers everywhere. They were up to like 2 and 3 in the morning. Then had to be at court by 7:30 trying to get all the evidence together to prove their innocence. And it's very heartbreaking to know that something like this could happen in America. I don't have any faith left in the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't teach my son to have any faith in it because it's not right.
Right.
It needs to be fixed.
And, you know, Cliff and I were there on many of those nights, and when I know it is gut-wrenching. When you are preparing like that, you have the law on your side,
mm-hmm.
yet you have obviously some mechanisms that are in place where people are doing everything they can to twist the truth,
yes.
trying to say that, you know, what you're doing is crooked, and then not allowing you
yes.
to defend yourself.
To defend yourself.
You know, exactly. and you know, all the accounts, and you were there, I was there, Cliff was there, Ethel, you know, all of us were there, actually. And to see how the IRP6 performed as far as defending themselves, and like
yes.
you said, fighting for their
lives. Yes.
You know, they could hold up to any attorney, and that's what some attorneys who were in the courtroom said.
Oh, yes.
So we'll be right back. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. Call in at 718-305-7176. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Conservative Nation Radio, where we still say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
There are many sounds in your day-to-day life. There are sounds that wake you up. Sounds that make you smile. Sounds that energize you. And sounds that help you relax. But there are some sounds that can alert you to danger and can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you information about severe weather events, amber alerts, or other emergencies in your area. With critical information from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know, wherever you are. For more information, visit ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. In the studio this evening, we have Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes, wives of the IRP6. We're talking a little bit about the IRP6 and getting to know them from the wives' perspective, and talking about some of the things related to what they saw in their husbands as far as businessmen, as far as trying to start a business, and then some of the things that occurred during the trial. And so, you know, Tasha, let's talk about Demetrius. And, you know, during the trial, I know he was right there with everyone else as far as, you know, the preparation is concerned.
Right.
You know, what were some of the things as far as when, you know, was he confident that they were going to, you know, have everything together and be able to defend themselves properly?
Yes, he was very confident. Like Nisi had, well, Yolanda had mentioned earlier, there were many nights that I went to bed and, I mean, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and he'd just be there. I mean, he would come in late. They stayed up late so many nights working hard. He would call me if I was out. I need you to go buy a hole puncher, because they were getting all of their legal papers ready. I think he burned through 2 or 3 hole punchers that I bought because they were prepping so much paper, getting their case ready. He was completely confident that they were going to come out on top because they were not guilty at all. They had all their evidence lined up. Everything was set from the beginning, and he was completely confident that, you know, they would be home.
And Esther, I mean, your husband, David Banks, he is like an attorney, basically. And, you know, he studies case law like I have seen no one, and I don't know a lot of attorneys, but, you know, when you look at the way David digs into things, and that was the way he was in business. But, you know, I think when you look at the tenacity, and I always use that word when I'm speaking of David, you know, I know that he had confidence that there was no way that that this thing was going to go to a conviction. What were some of the things that when you saw David preparing for this trial, you know, what did you see in David?
I saw him being excited about the outcome, that, you know, that he was positive. You know, he's not a pessimistic person. He's optimistic. And so he prepped and he worked hard. Like Yolanda and Tasha said, they spent many nights up working hard on the case and, you know, digging. And, you know, I guess he was the one that was, you know, looking up different things, you know, find out more about the law, you know, what the law says about this or what the law says about that. And I think in general, all the guys were excited and happy about the outcome because we, the wives were too. We thought, you know, everything was going to work in their best interest because they was defending themselves. They couldn't depend on the court-appointed lawyers they had because they were crooked. You know, they were working on a hand against them. And so we just believed, you know, that everything was going to work out in the best interest for them.
And, you know, I have to go back to 2005, right after the raid. I spent many days at you guys' house, David and I sitting at the dining room table.
You sure did.
And looking at the search warrant and going through it line by line and basically and looking at the things that the search warrant talked about and answering those allegations. And David would dig and dig and dig into, you know, what the search warrant was talking about. And we would put an answer down for everything that we could possibly look at to show that this was a legitimate business and that there was nothing crooked going on with regard to the operations of IRP Solutions. Now, Tasha, Tisha, when we look at Kendrick and you look at, I know Kendrick is one of those guys, he's a techie guy. And he started to dig into a lot of similar situations and where companies, you know, we're talking about a startup company here, an IT startup company where these guys were doing nothing any different than anyone else as far as you call on friends and family to help to pool your resources in order to launch a business. And I know Kendrick was doing the same thing. Now, you know, when we talk about I'm going to jump to this thing about the 200 pages missing. Now, when Judge Arguello compelled them to jump on the stand and basically forced them to get on the stand, and Kendrick, he exercised his Fifth Amendment right and said, you know, basically I didn't do anything, but you're not getting ready to make me talk about it. So when you look at this situation and then after the fact, you have Judge Arguello and Christine Martinez Darlene Martinez and Christine Arguello, and basically covering up and ensuring that 200 pages of transcript, which would substantiate the fact that Kendrick was, in fact, compelled to get on the stand, that has to blow you away.
It is pretty mind-boggling because you don't think that something like that could really happen and that they would hide a transcript and that you could ask for it for the last 2 or 3 years and still not have it. It's not on file. You can't go find it, which, you know, by law, it's supposed to be there.
Exactly.
You should be able to go get it and go see it and read it. But there's parts missing. So it is pretty mind-boggling that could even happen.
Yeah. And you know, as you guys know, we have a lawsuit that's going on with against Darlene Martinez. The U.S. Attorney's Office has jumped in there to defend her. And then the appellate attorney, Gwendolyn Solomon, has the appeal, and she's working that on behalf of the IRP6. But, you know, when you look at something like that, and it seems as though that the government is really fighting tooth and nail to ensure that this does not get released. And here your husbands are incarcerated. And, you know, I know you guys visit them every week. And so, Yolanda,
well, Sam, before you go there, if I could just say something. You know,
sure.
Listening to, you know, Yolanda talk about the days that we were there to, you know, preparing for the trial, and you and I were there, and what resonates with all of the wives is the fact that they say, well, you're looking at it, they're digging in the case law, they've got their evidence, and we thought the system was going to work. And you say, we have the evidence that proves that we're innocent. Anything that they say that we're guilty of, we can contradict that. Just like you and David took the search warrant and piece by piece broke it down, dissected it, and said, this is a lie, this is a lie, from the top to the bottom, from the fact when Agent Smith said it's a purported software company, all the way to the end, and you look at it and you say, we have evidence that we're innocent. And that's why when Esther is saying, you know, David was excited about, hey, when we finish this trial, it's going to all be over. And I remember one of those nights, you know, sitting there, and the guys are like, think about it. In 3 weeks, this will all be over.
Right.
We got all the evidence. I mean, because the more we dug into stuff, the more we found, well, this totally refutes what they were saying.
That's
This is business practice. This is basic business. You see here where the people in the staffing companies were lying. And as we pulled this stuff up, you know, we were getting excited about the fact that this is going to all be over because you're seeing where they're lying and where we have the evidence that proves that they're lying. And I think that is what gets me so much about the judicial system, because you can have your evidence there.
Right.
You can have everything in front of you. You can have it in front of the judge. You could have it there with the prosecutor, and as we read, like in the other article,
right,
that the prosecutor's position is supposed to be let justice be served.
I was just getting ready to make reference to that. You know, if it was good enough in 1940 with Attorney General Jackson at that time, you know, it should be good enough. That's what the system is supposed to be about.
And that's what the Constitution is about.
Right.
It was good enough when the forefathers of the country wrote it to say, sure, there has to be amendments, but the basis of it, the basis of the Constitution, the fabric of what America is built off of is good enough for us to use as our common law. And you look at these wives, you look at the time that they spent with their husbands, you look at the time that they spent in the courtroom, and, you know, the day that the guilty verdict came down, you look at all these things and you say, this is impossible.
And you know something, too? That's why, you know, every year they have hundreds of new laws that come out, you know, on the books and stuff. And so many things in reference to the judicial system has changed, and these so-called lawmakers have changed it in order for it to do what they want it to do, not laws that would, you know, are there for the people and to represent the people, but it is for their own use.
That's right.
You know, and that's why the system is so broken.
And, you know, we talk also about the fact that if a person does something wrong and if they're breaking the law, they do not want to bring it up. They don't want to talk about it.
Right.
That's where it's so, you know, it's not in the character of these gentlemen to be criminals.
Exactly.
And so in their character, they were going forward and saying, we didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Here's the evidence. When David and I were getting together in 2005 and going through that search warrant and saying, here's where you have holes in this thing, and this is where this thing makes no sense. Mm-hmm. That was presented to the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Absolutely.
The guys also got together and pulled together a proffer to, again, point out the fact that, okay, here are all the things that you're accusing us of.
Right.
And that's the thing, too, when we talk about an indictment, I was with David and Gary even on the day that they received their subpoenas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's one of those things where we immediately began to try and reach out to the media to say, okay, this is a case that should not be happening. Media, we're trying to get attention. And, you know, you look at it and it's like the media was not stepping forward. But if you're not doing anything wrong, then you step back and you say, man, I hope nobody finds out about this.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But if you're right and you are standing up for what's right and you're doing everything like Yolanda said before, you're fighting for your life.
Yeah.
And then when you find out about the court-appointed attorneys are doing nothing to support you. And we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back from this break. But Yolanda, Tisha, Tasha, and Esther, we want to thank you for being here. We're going to be talking to you a little bit more on the other side of the break. This is the Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, information about judicial injustice. You can call in at 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176, a Just Cause Coast to Coast.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
I'm making beef sliders for my friend Sammy. Nana taught me to always pull meat off the grill early, so it's extra juicy.
Use a food thermometer to ensure ground beef is 160 degrees, or you could make people really sick. Sandy didn't think twice about the slider she ate until yoga class, when a nasty case of food poisoning turned her downward-facing dog into upward-moving lunch. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov and learn the steps Maria unwittingly leaves out. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. I start laundry at 8. At 10, we go for a walk. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez joining me as my co-host. This is Sam Thurman. In the studio this evening, we have Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes, wives of four of the IRP6. And, you know, during the break, Esther, we were just talking about another one of the reasons why David was excited. You know, what were you sharing with me during the break?
What came to my mind, another reason why the guys and David were excited is because they impeached so many of the prosecutor witnesses, you know, that went on the stand, and a lot of them that was, you know, knew about the software, that it was in the process of being sold, that it had went to Homeland Security, and they knew what kind of software it was to help law enforcement. Some of them even went on the stand and lied about it, say they didn't know, you know, what it was, that it wasn't a viable software, and, you know, saying that they didn't know that it was going to make money and all this stuff. So they had impeached a lot of the witnesses sitting right there on the stand. And we saw it, and I was there, and I listened to it. And that's another reason why the guys thought they, you know,
When you have the prosecution witnesses that are sitting there lying, they're getting caught in lies.
Yeah.
And then you have, like you were saying, as far as the viability of the software, you have a company called CaliForensics who does an analysis of the software and says that it is a viable software, the company is legitimate. You have other folks, retired federal agents, who are saying, yeah, the company is legitimate. You got all kinds of evidence there. And then you have people getting on the stand who are lying. And then the IRP6 who I think we've stated this, they represented themselves pro se because of the fact that the court-appointed attorneys were just ready to just hand them over.
Yeah.
And Yolanda, during the break, you were saying that you were there on the day that they put Kendrick on the stand.
Yeah, I was there because I remember the judge, she was getting very, very angry because when they she had that sidebar and she called them up front and told them that one of them would have to take a stand. So we went out for a break during that time. We were in the little room talking about it, and they were saying we're not supposed to get on the stand. Why is she forcing us to take the stand? But that judge, and we sat there that day after Kendrick had got on the stand and invoked his Fifth Amendment rights, we sat there and asked her about getting the transcript that day of what happened at that sidebar. So we kept sitting and kept waiting. Her and the court reporter, Darlene Martinez, and the judge, Christine Arguello, were back in her chambers and stayed back there forever. And we were sitting out there waiting to get it. And finally they came out and told us, no, they weren't going to let us have it.
Well, and that's in the last day of the official proceedings of the trial where Judge Arguello basically asked Martinez, because I believe Clinton Stewart, he asked the judge, and he said, you know, the judge said, is there any other business we need to take care of? And Clinton Stewart, he said, yes, Your Honor, we have that request for the transcript. Judge Arguello asked Martinez, well, what are we talking about here? And she says, 200 pages. Mm-hmm. Well, and then Judge Arguello says, well, I see no reason to deliver that. It's not going to help anything.
How do you tell the defendant?
I'm not going to expedite it, and I'm not going to provide the – excuse me?
Yeah, she's acting like she's above the law, like she's playing God.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and that really infuriated me. A lot of things she did in that courtroom was that way. She was always coming across like, you know, I set this down. She doesn't abide by the law. She didn't abide by anything. And I never knew until I got in that courtroom how crooked I never knew a judge would be that crooked.
Yeah.
Judges are supposed to judge righteously. She didn't judge anything. She just was a one-sided person working with the prosecution.
Yeah.
And her and that court reporter got together back in that room and decided, no, we can't give this. We got to cover this up, because she knew it was gonna catch her in something.
And
that was the conspiracy. Go ahead, Tisha. That was the conspiracy.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? There was a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff between the judge and the court reporter, the prosecution, and our so-called court-appointed attorneys. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of little things behind the scenes. They accused our guys of a conspiracy, but the stuff they were doing, some dirty, underhanded stuff, was the real conspiracy.
And, you know, Cliff, I think about, you know, when you read about some of the investigations that goes on in some of the other federal districts, it kind of makes you have a little bit of confidence that you know, the 10th district is not immune to this. And
right.
I think, you know, as long as organizations like A Just Cause are out here and continuing to push for this kind of thing, we're going to draw attention to it. So, you know, ladies, I want to take you to the day of the verdict. And, you know, I was in the courtroom sitting there that day. And, you know, I and the jury comes in, and the jury begins to read their verdict. And name by name, going down all of the indictment, all of the charges, and began to say guilty. Guilty, guilty. And to paint the picture for the listeners, if you can envision a federal courtroom, and then all of a sudden you have, I don't know, what was it, like 10 or 12 federal marshals?
12.
It was like two federal marshals per person.
Yeah.
You would have thought that these were hardened criminals that were about to be, and even that, okay, let's talk about that. No one is supposed to know what the verdict is, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So how are you going to bring in 12 federal marshals, mm-hmm. clanging chains and shackles, and you don't even know what the verdict is yet?
It hasn't even been read yet.
That's right. So, Yolanda, when you saw this scene, I know what it did to me, but I'm not going to talk about me. I want you guys to talk about you. When you saw this scene and the guys are sitting at the defense table, and all of these marshals, one after the other, comes through this door. What? I mean, you and I and my son were sitting next to each
mm-hmm.
other.
I was totally in shock. When I walked in there, the courtroom was packed, and you got the feeling that they already knew that the verdict was going to be guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I sat there and I kept sitting there listening, I kept looking around, I thought, and you could feel inside that something wasn't right. And so when we sat there and they began to start reading the verdict, I was sitting there. I couldn't even look up. All I kept hearing was guilty. I thought this is impossible, because when you sit and remember sitting through the trial, and you watched how the guys defended themselves, and you watched how they were engaged with our guys, you just knew that they were going to come back with a not guilty verdict.
Right.
And so when they read the verdict, I couldn't even, I just went numb.
Right.
I couldn't just to think about it now is just like I was just in total shock.
Absolutely.
And I looked at the face of my husband and my brother and his friends.
Yeah.
And they looked back at us because they were worried about us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I remember my brother David looked back at me and he said, he just mouthed to me, "It's going to be okay."
Yeah, I remember that.
And
David actually had a smile on his face.
Yeah, because he figured, you know, it would be okay.
Yeah.
And so when they kept reading the verdict guilty, I thought I have to let my family know back, my mother, and I didn't know how I was going to tell my son.
Right.
And the children. And I was sitting in the courtroom. I had a cell phone, and I was trying to get a text message to them. And my fingers, my hands, everything was shaking so bad that I finally got the word guilty typed in so I could let them know. And all of us were in shock. All the wives, all of us, we just sat there. And then when they went to shackle them, they put shackles around their wrists, their
feet,
around their waist. And then they took all their personal belongings and they came and handed them to us.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing, I mean, you just didn't expect. You see these guys that are good guys. They've never broken the law. They've never done anything like that. Then all of a sudden, and I thought about all the hard work that my husband did to bring this, to help this country.
Yeah.
And to see that end up like this, for the reward that he got for doing something that was trying to help this country, they put a knife in his back.
That's right.
And I will never, the longest day I live, I will never trust the justice system the longest day I live. It's sad to say, but you have to walk in my shoes.
That's right.
You have to go what I went through
to
understand where I'm coming from.
But the justice system, when you look at it and you see innocent men shackled, you see them arrested, you see the marshals that show up before the verdict is read, you see the judge, you know, in her chambers with the court reporter refusing to give parts of the transcripts, even now. And you look at the justice system and you say, why should I trust it?
Yes.
Why should I believe that I'm going to get any justice? When I presented my evidence and the judge told me, not just the prosecutor, the judge said, no, we're not going to let your expert witness testify.
Yeah.
When you present an affidavit from a retired federal agent who worked on the software with you as a subject matter expert, who was in the building, who knew these men and worked with them, and when you say, I want the jury to be able to see this sworn affidavit by this federal agent. He knows what crime is. He's got over 20 years working, you know, with crooks. He knows what crime is.
Yeah. And, you know, Cliff, and just reflecting back on what Yolanda was saying, you know, she said it was like, you know, the government and at the hands of Judge Arguello stabbed her husband in the back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not just stabbing him in the back with a knife, but that was like a saber that stabbed all six of them at the same time. And to add insult to injury, when Judge Arguello said that, you know, I'm not going to grant bond, it's like, what?
Yeah.
It's like you have men that have never, don't have a criminal record at all. And if you had allowed them to present a case, like we said before, expert witnesses were not allowed to be on the stand.
Yeah.
Forensics evidence was not allowed to be presented. As Esther just stated, government witness after government witness was impeached by the IRP6.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have defense witnesses that the prosecutor tampered with, and to this day we believe that something happened in that jury room because it was when the jury came back after I think the first day and a half of deliberation and said, you know, we have a question, and the question was, you know, is there any more evidence?
Right.
Oh yeah, there's more evidence. The Judge Arguello is not going to let you hear it, but there is more evidence. Yes,
that's
Esther,
right.
Go ahead.
And one thing I wanted to add was when they select a jury, to my understanding, they're supposed to be jury of their peers.
Absolutely.
These were IT professionals, you know, been in IT.
The IRP6 were
IT professionals been in the field for years, you know, working high top senior positions and stuff like that. And it was brought to my attention that some of these jurors were working at McDonald's. So what do they know about They should have people that knew about a startup company, the ins and outs, you know, what you go to with a startup company.
Yeah.
Not somebody that's just working for McDonald's.
And the thing is, you know, we don't have anything against people that work at McDonald's.
Yeah, we don't.
I think that people that work at McDonald's or at the grocery store or wherever,
absolutely,
they can make a conscious decision as well
if they give them the right information.
They were not given the information. And so, you know, later in the program, we're going to have Jeffrey Deskovich on as far as talk a little bit about our exoneree moment and have Jeffrey talk a little bit about his organization. But ladies, please stick around because we're going to come back to this and talk a little bit more about this. So we'll give you an opportunity to take a break. And so go ahead, Cliff.
Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon. And rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers. So what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hanger flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks. Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You've got to try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We got a good program going tonight. We have the wives of the IRP6 here in the studio. We have Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes. We'll be right back to them in a few minutes. On the phones, Cliff, do we have Jeffrey on? We're going to take a quick moment here to talk to Jeffrey. Jeffrey is our exoneree moment focus, and Jeffrey Deskovich out of New York. Jeffrey, are you there?
Absolutely, I'm here.
Hi, Jeffrey. How you doing this evening?
Very good. How are you?
We're doing well. Doing well, Jeffrey. Yeah, we got a good program going, and wanted to give you an opportunity to get in here, and you're our exoneree moment for the evening. And, Jeffrey, we want you to share your story with us. I know you were wrongly convicted in 1990 of a rape, beating, and strangulation of a young lady in New York. How old were you at that time, Jeffrey?
I was 16 when I was arrested. I was 17 by the time the trial rolled around, and I was wrongfully convicted.
And you were exonerated, what, in 2006, 2007?
I was exonerated in 2006 by further DNA testing, which not only reaffirmed my innocence, but it also identified the actual perpetrator. Before I went to trial, there was a DNA test result on record from the FBI lab, which showed that semen found in the victim didn't match me. And really, by everything that's right, the case should have stopped at that point. But,
yeah, absolutely.
But the prosecutor, you know, they wanted to you know, they want to admit they made a mistake. So they elicited fraud on the part of the medical examiner who they got the medical examiner to say 6 months after doing an autopsy, they got him to say that he found evidence to show that the victim, who was a 15-year-old immigrant from Colombia living a very sheltered life, that he found medical evidence to show she had been sexually active, which is what opened the door for the prosecutor to argue that it didn't matter that the seminal fluid didn't come from me because she could have had sex close enough to the murder and rape so as to explain away the DNA.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
Yeah, just my other thought was just that the, you know, at the same time, the public defender that I had wasn't very good.
You know, Jeffrey, we hear horror stories of public defenders who, or defendants, who are acquainted with their public defender, you know, 15, 20 minutes before going to trial. I mean, please tell me that your situation was not like that.
My public defender very rarely met with me, and I think he met with me like four times, and you know, three of those occasions was because I pushed the issue. So I would have to say that, yes, my experience was like, I mean, this guy was an absolute nightmare. I mean, he never interviewed my alibi witness. He never called the alibi to the stand. He never cross-examined the medical examiner that committed that fraud. He let the judge tell him when he had to decide if he wanted a bench trial or a jury trial. The judge came to him off the record and told him, pick a jury because I don't want to be responsible for finding your client not guilty. He never put that on the record or asked the judge to recuse himself. He never explained to the jury what the negative DNA test result meant or used that to argue that the so-called confession was coerced and false. And he wouldn't allow me to testify at the trial either.
So, Jeffrey, I know in the Central Park case, you know, there were situations that came out later in their documentation as far as their exoneration that the detectives coerced their confessions. And it seems as though in this situation and as well with yours, it looks like I'm reading here in your profile that it says that one of the detectives basically coerced you into a confession. I mean, as a young teen, what was that situation like? I mean, were you just in a room by yourself with this detective? Really? Did they allow you to have your parents there? Mm-hmm. Did you have, you know, counsel mm-hmm. there? I mean, you're supposed to have counsel when someone is questioning you.
All right, let me answer your question. Firstly, in New York State, by law, if a person is 16 years old, you're considered to be an adult for purposes of being able to waive your rights and for them to be able to question you without an adult being present. So in a nutshell, they drove me out of county from Peekskill, which is in Westchester County, to the town of Brewster, which is in Putnam County. So, you know, it's a school day. My parents don't know where I'm at. I don't know where I'm at. They put me in a small room. They attached this polygraph machine to me. The polygraphist himself is a undercover Putnam County Sheriff's investigator who was pretending to be a civilian. There were three cops there that I knew of, and they played good cop, bad cop. You know, they raised their voice at me, invaded my personal space, and ultimately they threatened to harm me, and then they made a false promise saying that if I confessed that I could go home afterwards. And, you know, I wasn't thinking about anything long term. I was in fear of my life, and so I made up the story based on information they gave me in the course of their interrogation.
And so
I was 16 years old at the time.
Right.
Yeah. And you spent 17 years in prison for this.
16 years
in prison for something you didn't do. And see, that's the thing, because you said at 16 in New York, you can basically, they can interrogate you without your without your parents there.
Didn't even have to call his parents.
I mean, that is totally crazy. Now, you can't vote. You can't buy cigarettes or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go to the military
mm-hmm.
without your parents' consent. But if they're looking for a scapegoat,
and I think you'd be considered a truant if you missed
school.
Exactly.
If you were to miss school, they say you're ditching, you're truant. We're gonna lock you up and call your parents. But they can get you in a room and interrogate you so that they can
as an adult,
just so they can have somebody to pin it on, so they can say, hey, we got our conviction. At any cost, but gratefully, you know that the new DA got you a DNA test. got you exonerated, and now you've started up your foundation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I used a substantial portion of the money I received as compensation to start the Jeffrey Deskovic Foundation for Justice, whose purpose is to clear other people who've been wrongfully convicted. My foundation, unlike most organizations in the field, we don't just take on DNA cases, which is only around in 5 to 12% of all serious felony cases, but we handle the non-DNA cases also. We raise awareness, we seek legislative changes, and we try to help guys reintegrate back into society once they've been exonerated.
So is that what the 10,000 Strong for Deskovic is?
10,000 Strong, but here's what 10,000 Strong for Deskovic is. The amount of money that I committed, I can run the foundation for 3 years based on that. In a year and a half time, we helped exonerate William Lopez after 23 and a half years. We got a couple of people out on parole while they were maintaining their innocence, which normally if you assert innocence at the parole board rather than express remorse, they'll automatically deny you. We've done the other awareness stuff, and we also leased an apartment where we've had several exonerees live that didn't have a place to stay. So what 10,000 Strong for Deskovic is that I can't, you know, I'm not Donald Trump. I got what I got from the state and the federal, but, you know, I'm not like a double-digit millionaire. So I can only take things so far, okay? I need to have donors. I need to build up a donor base. And so my idea was when 10,000 Strong for Deskovic is that if we get 10,000 people that could commit to $10 a month, you know, we have text-to-donate technology in place where if people take their cell phones out and dial 50555 and then put the word innocent in there, then that'll result in a $10 donation being made. So it's less than 40 cents a day. And if I could get 10,000 people, we would raise $1.2 million, which would enable me to not only maintain the strong infrastructure I have already, the four full-time staff people, our office, all the overhead, but we could add investigators, we could add attorneys, we could add caseworkers. You know, it's hard to imagine that someone can't afford 40 cents a day.
Yeah, right. And, you know, Jeffrey, I think that's awesome what you're doing. That's one of the things, even with the Just Cause, you know, from the standpoint that there are a lot of organizations out there that do the DNA-based support, of which you were obviously a benefactor of, but there are a lot of other folks, just like the IRP6, which you've heard us talk about, which is a non-DNA-based case. And you know, and as you're probably finding out, it's a lot of work when it comes to non-DNA type cases. And you pointed out something that we were talking to Lamont Banks a couple of weeks ago. And like you said, if you agree to take some of the classes that they say you have to take, then it basically impacts your chances of parole because it's like a double-edged sword. They say, well, you got to take these classes. Well, I don't have to do anything if I'm not guilty. Mm-hmm. And if as soon as I agree to take this class in prison, then it's like an admission. And mm-hmm. so, you know, that kind of thing that you were bringing up is just is right on point. Mm-hmm. So, Jeffrey, what do you have coming up? I know that you do a lot of speaking engagements and you publish articles. I've actually read several of your articles online. And so, you know, we're excited about the things that you're doing. But for our listeners, you know, what are some of the things that you have on your calendar coming up?
I've got a few more presentations. I'm coming up. I'm going to in January. It looks like January. I'm going to do a presentation in Canada. I've been in talks with other educational institutions here in New York. We have a bunch of cases coming up. You know, just as an individual advocate. Myself and some of the other people that I work with, you know, we interjected the issue of prosecutorial misconduct and wrongful convictions into the Brooklyn District Attorney's race, and we helped beat an incumbent who had been there 23 years in a primary on that issue, on the issue of wrongful convictions, and now he's in a victory celebration. His speech, the new DA said that, you know, he spent about 7 minutes talking about correcting pre-existing wrongful conviction cases. So we have about 53 Brooklyn cases at the foundation where people have written in and have alleged actual innocence, and to be able to, have a district attorney that'll be, receptive, that maybe we can get some of the documents that normally would be, withdrawn, and we can put together a credible case of innocence and go to the DA with it, so it might not be a fight in court if we can come up with the right evidence. So, I mean, what we think, we're hoping that we can, free between 5 to 10 people in the next year.
And, Jeffrey, I think when you get a DA in office who is concerned about people who are sitting there that shouldn't be there, I mean, that's obvious. That's definitely a step in the right direction. We were talking earlier during this program, and it's unfortunate that we have to go all the way back to 1940 to find a comment from a U.S. attorney. Or an attorney general, basically stating that it's not our job to win, about getting the win in the win column, but it's about ensuring that justice prevails. And it doesn't matter whether the prosecution or the defense wins, but it's about
about justice.
Yeah. And so Jeffrey, that's one of the things that we are definitely on board with you on that. And so Jeffrey, stand by, and Cliff has to take care of a little bit of business here, and then we're going to allow you to give a little bit of contact information. So stand by, Jeffrey, just one second.
Righty, one of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques, an outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wives Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wives Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Hello, this is Robin Zanner.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for Rad.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives, and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez, my co-hosts. Also on the phones, we have Jeffrey Deskovich. He's our exoneree moment exoneree. And Jeffrey was wrongfully convicted in 1990. Was exonerated in 2006, was awarded there is no compensation for a wrongful conviction, but, they gave you a few dollars there, Jeffrey, I guess. There's no compensation for, taking away a major part of your life. But Jeffrey has started the Jeffrey Deskovich Foundation, and with the purpose of handling DNA-based as well as non-DNA-based cases, and he has a program that talks about 10,000 strong for Deskovich. So, Jeffrey, how can folks get in contact with you? Give us a phone number and a website, and then we're going to cut you loose, and we're going to jump back to the wives of the IRP6.
Sure. The website is www.thejeffreydeskovichfoundationforjustice.org. I'll spell it for our listeners, JeffreyDeskovich foundationforjustice.org. The website is Jeff@thejeffreydeskovichfoundationforjustice.org. Listen, if that's a long name, just people can Google my name. The foundation will come up on that first page of links, so people can email me through there. I want to say, I can't emphasize enough that, you know, when you send the wrong person a prison, you're not just sending them, you also send their family, their friends. And then on top of that, this is a public safety issue. You know, you leave the actual perpetrators free to strike again. That's what happened in my case. I mean, I'm only out because the actual perpetrator killed somebody, you know, killed another woman 3.5 years later, got caught for that, and as a result of that, his DNA got into the database so that when I did get the further testing, you know, it matched him. But, you know, we got another set of victim because of that. And imagine if he hadn't gotten caught for committing another crime, I'd still be in prison wrongfully.
That's correct, and you know, and that's a key point, Jeffrey, in the sense that you know, you do have someone else who committed another crime. Unfortunately, it was another. You know, he's serving a life term for another murder. So you know, someone else ended up losing their life because of the fact that they had the wrong man in prison. And so, Jeffrey, we're going to post your information on our websites. We have the Just Cause website as well as the AJCRadio.com website. And so, Jeffrey, we want to thank you for joining us. You have any closing thoughts before we go?
Just that, you know, this is an issue that affects everybody. I can't think of a stronger thing than to have, you know, just grassroots support to, you know, back at advocacy work. You know, if you've been wrongfully convicted, if your family members have been, if your friends have been, don't quit. I mean, if I had quit, I would never be out. I try to ask people again, just, you know, try to find it, to come up with that 40 cents a day, man, 10,000 strong for Deskovich, you know, 50555, the word innocent. Beyond that, you know, I think that it's many people that work together in causing injustices, from, you know, the law enforcement level to, you know, the prosecutorial level to the judges, who too often are the second or third prosecutor in the room, to the appellate judges who often rubber stamp deny appeals regardless of the facts of the law, you know, to defense attorneys who are, you know, don't do their job or incompetent or throw the case on purpose or don't want to step on the toes of their friend, their drinking buddy who they play, you know, golf with during the summer. All of those people work together. And in the same way, I believe that everybody that is aware of wrongful convictions or were fighting against it through, you know, whatever platform they have, whatever means is available to them, you know, we got to work together too, which is why I'm so happy to have had an opportunity to come on the show tonight and to participate. And just like you mentioned, to post my information. I mean, I'm more than happy to post, you know, information on the case you guys are talking about. I'm on my Facebook wall, and I just look forward to collaborating and doing the things that's available to me, and vice versa, because we all gotta pull together, man. I can't do this alone. None of you guys can do it alone. None of the organizations I feel can alone. It's a team effort because, you know, I believe the bad guys are working together.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, thanks for joining us tonight, our Exoneree Moment Exoneree. Go out and do a search on the Jeffrey Deskovich Foundation. A man that was wrongly convicted, but exonerated in 2006. Now he's out doing the same thing that we're doing as far as trying to help others. Jeffrey, thank you for the work that you're doing. And, yes, we will definitely collaborate. And so, Cliff, Ethel, ladies, we have the wives of four of the IRP6 here in the studio with us. Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, Tisha Barnes, the wife of Gary Walker. Yolanda, we were, before our break and before we took a break a little bit ago, we were talking about, you know, and Jeffrey just made an excellent point. He was saying, you know, people have to realize that when they convict someone, and especially when it's a wrongful conviction, it's impacting more than just the person that they took to prison. I mean, we hear it all the time. There are people in prison who are sitting there and they say, no, I'm supposed to be here. Then you have another group who say, I'm not supposed to be here, but they're supposed to be there. But then there's this other group who say, I'm not supposed to be here, and they're not supposed to be there. That's what we're talking about when we talk about the IRP6. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were talking about, and Ethel brought up the point, you know, where we were talking about the U.S. Marshals coming into the courtroom on the day of the conviction.
Right.
And, you know, it angers me mm-hmm. from the standpoint of when Judge Arguello refused to allow the guys to be out yeah. on their own recognizance because it was as if she had a vendetta.
Yes,
there was
yes.
so much vindictiveness going on yes, in this right. trial, and she even said that, you know, she I think it may have been in LaWanna's case, mm-hmm. you know, wanted to make a point.
Exactly. Yes.
And yes. I, you know, certain words or certain things that certain ones of the guys say, and at this point I think Kendrick, he even made a point comment once. He said, so what was Judge Arguello trying to prove?
Yeah.
You do the right thing and you go to prison?
Exactly.
You know, so Yolanda, when you heard and when you saw the way Judge Arguello conducted this trial, and especially, you know, the guys never did anything wrong.
No.
They didn't have a criminal record. But she made it seem as though, you know, well, they got all this money stashed away somewhere and they're getting ready to flee. If they wanted to flee, they could have gone way before then.
A long time ago.
And
she even went to the point on the day that she was reading the verdict, it gave her pleasure mm-hmm. to say guilty. It's the way she did it. It's the way she carried herself throughout that whole trial. She is one of the most evil women that I have ever laid eyes on. You never thought that a judge would be sitting up there with something against people personally when you're supposed to be impartial.
Exactly.
She was nowhere near impartial.
Right.
And I think a lot of times I noticed the guys, she got really, really upset when the guys would call her on something because she figured they didn't know things because they were pro se.
Right.
And so when they would question things that Kirsch did, the U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch did, when they would question her on why is this being done and why is this not being done and all this stuff, it made her very angry, and she visibly showed her anger in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, well, when I get my chance to get you guys, I'm going to make sure I do that. I'm not going to let you be out on bond or anything like that, which totally surprised me, because the fact is, before we even went down to get the hearing to see if the guys were going to go home, when she turned it over to a magistrate judge,
right.
She had already sent down to them that they were a flight risk and you should not let them go out,
that's
be
right.
free. Wow. Well, where did you get that from? They've been out on bond since the raid happened, since all the indictment came down, all this stuff. They didn't do anything. They didn't flee anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And had traveled abroad to
yeah,
other countries.
Exactly. Yeah, their passports had not been taken.
Right. No.
And they were actually still conducting business because yeah. of the fact that the fact still remained that IRP was a legitimate
yeah,
company,
right. yeah.
had a viable product. The U.S. Attorney's Office did everything to stop them from being able to
doing
do business.
Yes, they
because,
did.
Now, Yolanda, share the story. I mean, they tried to, and we see examples of this, when the U.S. Attorney's Office tries to bankrupt people so that they cannot make a living for themselves.
Yes.
They cannot defend themselves. It's almost like forcing you to take a public defender.
Yeah.
Gary was a director at Kaiser.
Yes, he was, and very good. He had a very good position, very good paying job. I know they had went to all of the guys' places of employment, spread out this information about them being indicted. Like, in other words, these are crooks. You want to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. Gary was the last one to get fired. They went to his job and set up and told the people about all these false things that were not even true. And I even went up to Gary's job to talk to his people and tell them what the government was doing and how he had worked on this software, that he was trying to help the law enforcement. And they said to me, he said, it's so horrible that the people you are trying to help are the ones that's turning around to screw you like this.
That's right. Yeah.
That's exactly what they said to me.
Yeah.
And I said, and I was so upset when they finally did let him go. I thought they had no reason to let him go, but they went ahead of them guys everywhere they went.
Yeah. That's right.
Everywhere they tried to get employment, yeah, they couldn't get it.
That's
we ended up having to file bankrupt.
And you know, let's kind of paint the picture because, you know, we all know the story, but people that are out there listening, they're like, wait a minute, they had a business, but they got jobs. They had, you know. Well, you know, for the listeners out there, the thing is the guys were running a business. Mm-hmm. The government went everywhere that they could. They went to Philadelphia. They went to Colombia because they ended up having to go abroad. Went to Trinidad, to the Bahamas. All these places, I mean, like Colombia, Trinidad, and the Bahamas, they were ready to sign.
Right.
The, the city of Philadelphia was ready to sign.
Yes.
The U.S. Attorney's Office, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch, he either sent an email or he sent a made a phone call or something and basically said, these guys are about to be indicted.
Right.
Or
this
these guys
pre-
are... Pre-indictment. Yeah.
Before it's like you were accused of something.
Exactly.
But you have the assistant U.S. attorney, Kirsch. Mm-hmm. Now he's interfering with you trying to make a living. He's telling people, no, these guys are going to be indicted. How do you know they're going to be indicted? You don't even have your grand jury panel.
Exactly. And then, and because they did everything to try and shut the business down, mm-hmm, and this is for the listeners again, they had to go out and find jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, they were good at what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have preferred to do something for the country,
yeah,
finish development of the Silk software, the case investigative lifecycle software, mm-hmm, and market that out there and get it in the hands of law enforcement so that there would not be a repeat of 9/11. Well, if you got the government impeding your ability to do business,
yeah,
then you got to make a living.
Yes.
So you go out and you try and find a job. Okay, now you're trying to find a job. So then they go behind you and say, oh, no, you don't want these guys working for you because they are crooks.
Yes.
They were not crooks. And like you say, the conspiracy lied in the government, Kirsch, and folks who were working with him to craft this thing to make it look like something crooked was going on. This is a Just Cause Radio where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back after this.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
Okay, here goes. I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than I do about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like PB&J, pigs in a blanket. Oh, and fish sticks. They do love fish sticks. Filets I get, but sticks? What part of the fish does the stick come from? I know I can read a cookbook that'll tell me how to make a red wine reduction. But where are the cookbooks that can teach me how to cut the crusts off bologna sandwiches? Oh, maybe we can compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with brie? Everybody likes brie, right?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to push your food around their plate. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast. I'm Sam Thurman, your host, with Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez.
If you love conservative internet radio as much as we do, then you already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows has been carrying the conservative message on the net for years, and now she's here on conservativenationmedia.com. Join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary, the latest news, and conservative analysis with a good dose of plain old-fashioned fun. That's Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
In the studio this evening, we have Yolanda Walker, Esther Banks, Tasha Harper, and Tisha Barnes, wives of four of the IRP-6, the IRP-6 being Gary Walker, David Banks, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, and Dave Zerpolo. Cliff, let's go to the phones. Who do we have on the phones?
Hey, we have Luana on the phones. Luana, are you with us?
Yes, hi. How are you all?
Hi, Luana. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. I just felt like I should call in and support my friends and their husbands. I didn't get to talk much about the IRP-6 when I was on the phone. I'm so proud of the wives. I think they stood by their husbands 100% because they are 100% innocent. And I think they should be commended for their strength and their tenacity and how they stand up and they've been such strong women. And I think that's beautiful. What I did want to say about the case, I was in the courtroom with the guys also, and I just wanted to say the judge and prosecutor resented the IRP-6 for standing up for themselves, and the way those guys worked and fought and knew that law. You would have swore they were judges. I mean that they were lawyers, and they won that case hands down. They were not going to let it be said that these six black men beat the federal government. That's the bottom line with it. That's the bottom line. But I know that the truth is going to win out before it's all said and done. As we've been told our entire life, the truth always wins out. And I just wanted to call in and congratulate the wives and say how much those guys. I've known them all my life, and how strong they are, and how they fought, and how they worked, and how they persevered and persevered and persevered. And they're going to be rewarded for that. And so I just want the wives to hang in there and stand up and be tall and know that we are all rooting for you.
Thank you.
And, you know, thanks, Luana, for your call. And, you know, one of the things, you know, we just celebrated Veterans Day yesterday.
Absolutely.
And all of these guys were patriotic. You know, and you look at the fact of, you know, Gary had a presidential appointment to the Air Force Academy. David, he was a air traffic controller in the Navy. He graduated top of his class. You also had Clinton Stewart. He was an NCO in the Air Force, and he handled ComSec. You also, and then there's Kendrick, there's Dave, then there's Demetrius. Kendrick's dad, he was a senior NCO in the Army. Demetrius's father was a senior NCO in the Army. Tisha, you are an Air Force Academy graduate. I mean, and your husband is Kendrick Barnes, and here you have folks, and we always share the story of how Gary and Yolanda talked about it at the beginning of the program, how he wanted to do something for his country. And Gary has made comments, and we've talked about it, how he was in New York, and he saw, you know, the Ground Zero. And when you're looking at Ground Zero, and he made the comment that that's why he was doing what he was doing, and that's why IRP was doing what they were doing. You know, and Yolanda, you so accurately articulated the fact that you have Judge Arguello now stabbing these men in their back who are nothing but patriots. I mean, you know, that's what, you know, conservativenationmedia.com talks about is patriotism. And, you know, you got folks who listen to this network who are concerned about patriotism. Yet you have six gentlemen here who are also concerned about patriotism.
Right, and when you look at, I mean, Gary and David and Dave Zerpolo and Kendrick and Demetrius and Clint, they did this for the protection, you know, they're creating this software for the protection of their families and the protection of yours, of the rest of America. That is what this was about. They wanted to help you in your country. They wanted to help us all to say, you know, they saw 9/11. They were there just like the rest of us were. And it was all about we cannot allow this to happen on American soil. Again, there's no way we can let somebody come in our backyard and pull this off again. And that's what it was about. It was about patriotism. It was about protecting our country. It was about doing something that needed to be done. And then to have your own government come in.
Exactly.
Stab you in the back. Stab you basically in your chest and watch you. I mean, when you look at what Judge Arguello did, you say she stood there. She's got the evidence in front of her. She won't let the jury see the evidence. She won't let expert witnesses testify. You mentioned the Cal Forensics analysis of the software. She wouldn't let that in.
And you know what, Cliff? Don Vilfer of Cal Forensics, he states in his analysis that this software is viable and it is something that the country needs.
Absolutely.
We have other folks who are saying that same thing now.
The same thing right now, saying the country needs that
this.
And we need it now. We still need this.
How many years?
This has been since 2005. So you're talking about 8 years.
You got the failure of the virtual case file.
Virtual case file.
Failure of the Sentinel project.
And you got like almost, what is it, close to $2 billion that have been spent on these projects.
They don't work. And
they
have
fail.
People looking at the Silk software developed by Gary Walker and saying that this thing works.
Right.
And
this works. We need this.
So why are they in prison?
Exactly. Hey, exactly. Once we get that answer.
What was Judge Arguello trying to prove?
What is she trying to prove?
What is
she
Matthew Kirsch trying to prove?
Right. She said
this.
About LaWanna Clark, I'm gonna make an example. It's like an example, just like Ken Barnes said. Your example is that if you do what's right, you present your evidence, that you're going to have a crooked jail that judge that's still going to lock
and
you
I
up.
And I think in LaWanna Clark's case, Judge Arguello said, I'm going to make an example of what happens when you lie to the federal
right.
government. Well, LaWanna Clark didn't lie to the federal
the
government.
Judge has evidence.
We had Judith Housley on last week talking on the show with LaWanna,
exactly.
showing that Judith Housley, being a certified handwriting expert, a forensics handwriting expert,
exactly.
proved that LaWanna Clark did no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The court did not even consider it. And then her attorney, Kornfeld, didn't present it.
Right.
She spent 6 months in prison.
And Judith Housley was totally blown away
that her evidence was not considered.
Whatever you want to call it, she said she had never seen where the evidence that would have exonerated a defendant. She's never seen where it was in prison.
And she had never been disqualified as an expert witness.
See, the America needs to see, see the example, what happens when prosecutors and corrupt judges
are
out of control and when they lie. Okay, she's
going to
make an example out of LaWanna. Let's see what happens when they lie.
That's right, and we're going to see to it that something does happen to the judge, that something does happen to the prosecutor that goes out of their way to put an innocent person.
Okay, we have a few minutes left. Esther, you wanted to make a comment.
One thing I wanted to add was when she read the verdict, and then she said to the guys, why didn't you use your God-given talent to do something good? And I was sitting there to myself, and I'm thinking, this software was a God-given thing,
Absolutely.
And they used their talent. But it's just because of the vendetta, the corruption, they didn't want the guys to sell the software. Some other companies wanted to steal it. It's just a bunch of corruption, and that's why, she stood up there and sat down like God and said, I have your life in my hand, like she's God, with her proud, arrogant self.
And so
I know God is going to make her eat her words just for saying that. So that's what I wanted to leave.
I want to ensure that folks go out to www.freetheirp6, the number 6, freetheirp6.org, and read a section that talks about letters from prison. You'll get to know a little bit more about the guys, about Gary Walker and David Banks, Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, Clinton Stewart, and Dave Zerpolo. Yolanda, your closing thoughts.
I just want American people to start making some noise about prosecutors and judges getting away with things like this. They need to be held accountable. They need to spend some time in prison for when they do wrong. Nobody holds them accountable. Nobody says nothing. They just keep doing. If you keep letting them do this, it's going to get worse. Think about this could happen to your children.
That's right. Tisha. It seems like when we have a show like this, it's like we were all sitting around saying, man, this thing just went by really fast. And so, Tisha, go ahead and share your closing thoughts.
I just would echo what Nisi said, that we need some accountability in the judicial system, the judicial process, for prosecutors, for judges. There shouldn't be immunity there. I mean, every other office or every other branch of government is held accountable, and they should be too.
Tasha?
I just think, in closing, that these judges and prosecutors need to be held accountable for the wrongdoing, and that our guys will be home soon. They were innocent, and that's it. They'll be home soon.
Esther?
I'm echoing other ladies' thoughts that they are innocent. You know, the software was developed for the government, and it's a viable software. It's not, they wasn't running a Ponzi scheme or nothing like that. It wasn't a wire fraud or anything like that. And, you know, God is in control of this whole situation. I know he's going to bring it to an end in his time. And then he's going to be make a believer of everybody that's sitting out there on the sidelines and gloating and thinking that, yeah, they deserve to be here. There are a lot of innocent people that's in jail that shouldn't be there, and they are one of them.
And, you know, a just cause coast to coast and a just cause, we're going to continue to stay in the fight. You know, we want to thank you for being here this evening. And you know, we always ask folks out there listening that if you know someone who knows someone, you know, reach out to Attorney General Eric Holder. Reach out to folks who are in office. We need to bring about reform. The IRP 6 case needs to be looked at. You know, there's no reason why they shouldn't look into this case. Cliff.
All right. We want to say thank you to our production crew, K&D Productions, Dustin Jackson, Captain Kyle in the back, and Il Skiller's girl. We also want to say thank you to the production support team. Without you, we couldn't do it. And to the truth, we know you're out there, and we appreciate you.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast. Check us out. A-JustCause.com. AJCRadio.com. Good night, America.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.